Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and we are very pleased and honored, is New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Governor, welcome back to the Capital Connection.
Thanks, Alan. Looking forward to a really good conversation.
Well, you'll get it, I'm sure. So, Governor, you marked 1 year in office this week on Wednesday. Take a moment for us to reflect on your first year in office and why New Yorkers should elect you in November. And please share your thoughts on this week's primaries. What lessons do you take from all of those elections?
You packed a lot in that question, Alan. So
let
me start. Let me start with just really what we accomplished in this last year. You know, I would say what I'm most proud of is the way that we were able to pull together a dynamite team of true professionals who know what they're doing, and then be able to meet the moment, whatever challenge came our way. You know, for example, when the Supreme Court came after and struck down our concealed carry law that had been on the books for 108 years. We sprung into action, brought back the legislature, made meaningful changes. Or when they, you know, struck down Roe v. Wade, you know, we had to step up as New York State and put money out there to help our providers and to, you know, be really smart in our response and let people know that as long as I'm governor, those rights are protected here. So those are just some of the, you know, unexpected challenges. In addition to a spike in Omicron, you know, we had to deal with getting kids back to school in a safe way and getting vaccines out. We dealt with cleanup of a hurricane. We dealt with a new legislative session to make sure that we, you know, invested in education and health care and our New York families, child care record spending and child care to make sure that we can get particularly moms back to work after the pandemic. But I've just been so honored to have the faith of New Yorkers. I've been still out everywhere. I was at the Syracuse Fair yesterday, so I'm not sitting in an office. That's not who I'll ever be. So I'm out there really connecting in the streets and in the farmers markets and just everywhere I can talk to New Yorkers and really just absorb from them what their concerns are. And as a woman, I know that this time of year, a lot of moms are worried about, you know, packing up the backpack and getting the kids ready to go back to school. And just I've lived all that, so that actually makes me a better governor as well to have those life experiences. So I would say it was an extraordinary year. I'm still humbled by the privilege that it is to represent such a fascinating state and to lead it through this pandemic. And so that's sort of a snapshot of the last year with tremendous accomplishments. But, you know, and also just I want to make sure that when people look back at our time, they say that we made smart decisions, we got our people through this. And just like we always do as New York, we come back even stronger. So that is what we're already on a path to do. That is an argument to make to the voters on how I'll protect their rights, continue investing in them, but lead us through these times to a place that we're going to look back on and say, wow, we got it done. You asked about primaries. The primaries were exciting. I was with Pat Ryan literally Monday night at a rally with him when he was still down in the polls and people didn't think he could pull it off. And I knew he could, because it reminded me so much of literally a decade ago when I was running in the most Republican district in the state of New York as a Democrat, but spoke to issues that people cared about. You know, how we're going to help our family farmers and our small businesses and how we can make sure that people have good educational opportunities and health care of all things. That was the big topic a decade ago, Social Security, Medicare. I knew that Pat had what it took to run and to win, and I've worked with him since the day he was sworn in as County Executive Ulster. In fact, I joke that there are probably three or four weekends this past winter where we had to go right to Ulster County, Kingston in particular, where they were dealing with the aftermath of power outages and ice storms and horrific weather. So I really got to know the community and his leadership. And so that was a huge win for us as a state, but also the issues he ran on, you know, what he put on the ballot, talking about a woman's right to have an abortion and saying that how is that in the state of New York people think that it's okay to deny this fundamental basic right of control, and that Republicans were running against him, Molinaro and others, supported government-mandated pregnancies, that you force a child, a teenager, a 12-year-old, to have a baby, even if there's rape or incest. That is just too extreme. And Pat Ryan put that on the ballot. And New Yorkers, you know, the turnout, which is hopeful to all of us in November, that there'll be even a higher turnout of energized, mobilized Democrats who know what's at stake in this election. So I thought that was a good bellwether for not just New York, but the nation. You never want to read too much into anything, but people would have read a lot into the fact that he had not won. And so I think we should celebrate the fact that this is a major, major accomplishment. And I look forward to his service in Washington.
So as we get closer from one election to another, do you think that New York State is going more Democratic?
Well, we're focusing on the issues that people are talking about, Alan, and one of them is public safety. And we're working very, very, very hard every day. It's what I focus on morning, noon, and night, is how we keep New Yorkers safe. And part of that came down to enacting very smart gun safety bills, especially after, again, the Supreme Court did an end run on us and took away our right to protect people from concealed carry and, you know, on buses and on, and in, you know, churches and synagogues and fairs and parks. So we had to make a lot of changes there. So what I would say is that New Yorkers want us to focus on their safety, their health, decisions that we're making every day with respect to the pandemic and concern about polio and monkeypox. We have to keep leading on these issues and being very transparent and letting people know what the issues are. So we feel that, you know, I believe that people will turn more Democratic in their voting, and even independents will come the way, because they know that the challenges that we're facing, particularly with a hostile Supreme Court, states are the last line of defense. That's why there's more focus on governor's races and state legislatures than ever before, because no matter what happens with the Supreme Court, we also have the ability and the power to continue to protect our citizens in the way that we know they want to be. And that includes protecting their right to be safe from guns, and includes their right to make decisions about their own bodies.
So when you're sitting around with family, your friends, and discussing the Supreme Court of the United States, which can't be much to your liking with the decision-making process right now, do you have a solution of how we should deal with these erratic decisions that are coming out from on high?
I wish I could make something happen, but the reality is that this is the best evidence that elections have consequences. So for people who didn't think it was an important election to show up to vote for a Democrat in 2016, Hillary Clinton, our nominee, and either didn't vote or thought they just cast a vote for someone new who, you know, used great phrases and made them think that America could be great again. Boy, were they misled. Now, are we living with the consequences? When Donald Trump had three Supreme Court openings, he filled them with the most conservative people he could find in our country. When they all made everyone think that, oh, no, we're going to support the law of the land, and that is Roe v. Wade. And then they turn around within a very short time and strip away a right that we've had for over 50 years. Rights that I had, that my mother fought for, that my now 30-something-year-old daughter and new grandbaby, granddaughter do not have. And that is shocking that this turns upside down the progress that we've always prided ourselves on in our state and our nation, that we move forward and not backward. And it is frightening, Alan, to hear the stories from other states that people could be charged with murder and face death penalties, and making teenagers have to have babies when they're not old enough to adopt a child, but they're going to be forced to become a parent as a 12-year-old. These aren't made up. These are real life stories. So it is a turbulent time in our nation, but we know where Democrats stand. And the extent that people realize elections matter, show up this election time, and people say, well, abortion's safe in the state of New York, we don't have to worry. I'll tell you, it's safe because I'm your governor. And if you had someone like my opponent who says that he would put in a pro-life health commissioner and does not support these rights, then we're really in trouble. And that's what's really on the line this November as well.
So you're a woman. You're the first woman governor. What do you make of the fact that that is the state of affairs, that you are the first? Is New York a sexist state?
Well, I'm the governor, and I guess I'm going to put my name on the ballot this November and give people to elect for the first time in our history a woman governor. And I will tell you, I take nothing for granted. I run like an underdog. This is my 14th election. I'm running hard. But I am feeling and seeing that there's an energy around this, because a year ago, people didn't know what to expect. You know, and I've had to demonstrate that a woman can be just as tough, just show the strength and the tenacity required to be successful in a rough and tumble state like New York, where politics is a particular brand of sport that a lot of women aren't accustomed to, but I have been. I'm up for the challenge. But we govern not just with strength, and we also govern with heart and compassion and empathy. And that's what sets my administration apart and our accomplishments, that we do feel deeply the responsibility to just help New Yorkers. That's why I was drawn to public service as a young person, and I've never lost that feeling that this is a tremendous opportunity to just help people. And that's, they want to have faith in their government again, and I'm working hard every day to restore that. So I didn't come here to make history. I came to make a difference, and we are making a difference even in just one short year. So, but also what is exciting when I'm walking through, you know, I was at the Troy Farmers Market at the Syracuse Fair yesterday. You know, not just mothers come up to me with their daughters, but fathers who want their little girls to, you know, see someone who's achieved something no one ever has done before. And they say to their girls, you know, even a little 8-year-old yesterday, you know, look, this is a woman governor. You could be a woman governor, never before. And the little girls get all excited. They don't really know what that means. But I think there's a sense of pride from a lot of people and parents who know that now after I'm done and what we've achieved and through this election, that no one will ever again question the ability to run the state of New York. And so that's what I'm hoping to do. I hope that is the legacy, not about me, but that people will know there's no barriers, that every little girl can grow up and be a governor because the door has been flung wide open, and there's no limit to what they can do. And that's the important message that I know that parents are really embracing.
Well, I want to ask you this question. Republicans were furious about your comments Monday that those without your values like Lee Zeldin and Mark Molinaro should leave for Florida because they're not New Yorkers and that you go too far.
Well, in that case, I'll simply say I referenced three people. I did not talk about all Republicans. My goodness, I've been elected to every job I've had with Republican support. I'm proud of that. And they know who I'm standing for. And many Republicans understand that we need to have smart gun safety legislation. They know we need to respect a woman's right to choose. So I was referring to three extreme individuals. I named those three individuals and said that their values are not aligned with the majority of New Yorkers. I mean, that is a statement of fact. So that's all I was pointing out. It was no way to denigrate the other Republicans whose support I've really enjoyed for a long time. So I'll just be clear on that.
Well, you're clear. Let's talk a little bit about some of the races. Nadler Maloney. Now, I was disturbed by that. I'm going to tell you the truth. We had a phenomenal woman congressman running against a pretty good, see what I did there, a pretty good Democrat, Jerry Nadler. What do you make of that result?
Well, it is just a, you know, really shame that the whole process toward resisting broke down and resulted in, you know, two really stellar individuals who dedicate their lives to public service having to be in the same district. I work with both of them. And in fact, I was actually, you know, live with Carolyn Maloney in Washington when I was brand new to the office, and she had an extra room in her house a few blocks from the Capitol. So wow. I've admired her for many, many, many years. And I've worked with Jerry Nadler on transportation infrastructure projects. So it was the worst choice that New Yorkers would ever have to make. Two leaders who ascended after decades of working in the fields, of finally being in real leadership positions, you know, Carolyn, the chair of oversight, and Jerry, the chair of the Judiciary Committee. So that's what was so difficult about this. And I hope that never happens again in our lifetime where we would have to make that kind of choice. But the voters have spoken. We move on and we work with the people that have now our nominees for November, and I work with all of them starting in January again.
Let me ask you this, Governor. Is it your sense that abortion has influenced the primary results and will impact the midterms?
I believe it will. We saw the first evidence of that on the referendum in Kansas. That was unexpected. And I think what people were stunned by was not just the result, but the number of people who turned out to vote. Mm-hmm. And what happens, and you've studied politics a long time, Ellen, you know, historically, midterms do not draw a lot of excitement. And sometimes there's just a reaction against whomever the incumbent is in Washington. So you can see patterns. And that's why what we saw in Pat Ryan's race really broke the mold, where, you know, when Barack Obama was in that seat in the presidency, that it was a Republican who was elected. And then when Trump was in, a Democrat. So it had always gone sort of the opposite of the party in power. And the fact that Joe Biden is our leader, he's our president, working hard in Washington, and then you still have Democrats elected in a real bellwether case. Pat Ryan's was not just, it wasn't a primary, it was a special election where a Democrat went against a Republican. That's what people are a little confused about because of the vacancy created when I asked Antonio Delgado, another outstanding public servant, to be my lieutenant governor. So I think abortion is on the ballot, Alan, but that's not the only thing. You know, that is an important issue to most, but also I'm aware that people needing to feel safe and know that they have good jobs, that they can live in the state with quality health care and outstanding education. Those are all factors that go into, you know, what voters think about what's on their minds. And safety and their kids are, I would say, number one. And abortion is right up there. And what I think abortion is, Alan, is a motivating force. That closes any enthusiasm gap that may have been out there between Democrats and Republicans. That gap is obliterated now. So now you have a state that's 2-1 Democrat, and if the voters will turn out and know that, yeah, even in the governor's race, you know, no one should be complacent and say, oh, it's New York. Of course, we'll always have the right to an abortion. My God, back until June, we all thought that Roe v. Wade would be the law of the land for the rest of our lives. So things happen, and people have to be smart in how they vote and not take a chance with even who the governor is. You know, I think people want to know that those rights are protected for as long as I'm governor.
Well, we're talking to Governor Kathy Hochul. Did Democrats mess up redistricting?
Yes. We need a better process. My God, it collapsed. I came into the process rather late, and, you know, I had a responsibility, which was either to, you know, I didn't draw the lines. I was not involved. But what I would say is I was presented with an option of moving forward with the plan that had been devised under the law that was set up, you know, by my predecessor. That was the system that was set up to involve the legislature. But also, if I had, you know, just said no, we wouldn't even had an election. You know, the process would have just been short-circuited. So it really was a Hobbesian choice. I didn't have many options here, but I had a minor role in that part. But overall, yes, we need to fix the system, a better process. And again, we're living with the collateral damage of what happened. But I'm also very excited about the candidates we do have on the ballot now that emerged from this. It was tough, but we have some really strong candidates to head into November. And obviously, there's some parts of our state where it's not always in question, you know, whether or not a Democrat will win, especially downstate. But upstate, we have some outstanding candidates in Long Island, and those will be the battlegrounds. And as the leader of the Democratic Party, I'll be leading the charge. I'll be working with all of our candidates to ensure that people know the true difference between our parties, what we stand for, what issues we believe are the most important to voters, and to meet the moment. And that's exactly what this election will be about.
So, Governor Hochul, what about the fallout from the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade? Has there been an uptick in women traveling to New York to get an abortion?
Yes, there has been, Alan. And a place like Western New York, where I'm from Buffalo. I've been to the Planned Parenthood facility there. I've supported them. We put money out there to help facilities be able to increase their capacity, $35 million, anticipating that after the decision was rendered, and as some of these states' trigger laws went into effect, and some just went into effect this week, where people are realizing that, you know, they thought they were okay, but now they're not. One out of three women in the country now live under a law that bans their right or limits their choice when it comes to an abortion. So that is a new dynamic, and women are finding their way to places like clinics in Western New York, which is only 3 hours from Ohio. So, and that's why, you know, we put forward, you know, we made our changes, we put money out there even before Roe v. Wade was struck down. As you recall, Alan, they leaked a memo a few weeks beforehand, and it, you know, we were really hoping that the reality would not come to be, but it did. But I sprung into action even beforehand to be ready to protect our providers, make sure that doctors and people involved in New York State could not be extradited and charged with murder or be face a death penalty. And I'm not making these stories up. Nope. That is what people are talking about in some of these states. That and the shocking stories that are coming out about, you know, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 13-year-olds, you know, who've been raped by someone they may have trusted, a stepfather or mother's boyfriend, and very early on they want to be able to, you know, get that child back to their childhood, and they're denied that by a judge. Are there laws? It is shocking. And I just wonder how we look to the rest of the world in terms of how we treat women overall, or even children, you know, people under the age of 18. So the shock value is high, and New York will do everything we can to be a safe haven for people who come here, protect them. And I'll stand up and hold that torch in my hand and say, no, not here, not ever, and help other states where there's governors who are running, where they may have a hostile legislature, you know, places like Michigan. You know, I've got friends who are other governors, other women governors, and they've got a real battle on their hands as well. So we're all in this together. But as you mentioned in our earlier conversation about the Supreme Court, that's not going to change anytime soon. And that is a very scary spectacle. I'm wondering what they're going to do next. Will they take away the right for an LGBTQ couple to marry, something that we honor as a right in our state and have nationwide? That is something they've already said that they're willing to take away. So these are very uncertain times. And what I can provide in New York is stability. Let people know we understand how difficult this is. Be the voice of reason and pull people together and do whatever we can within the power of state government.
Did you talk to your co-governors in other states about what's going on? I mean, is there a common approach to how you deal with all of this?
Yes. In fact, what I did was I launched a fund to raise money to help in the states where abortion is really on the ballot. So I'm helping the Democratic Governors Association. I took a leadership role there to make sure that we're focusing on these issues. I've talked about this nationally to talk about how we get support to these women governors in particular, governors in states where it's a real battleground. And the governors may believe philosophically the right thing to do, but they have a legislature who are hostile to that, or they have a trigger law where they need to overturn something that was put in motion before they became governor. So I'm very involved in this. And also on gun safety as well. I've been working with our state legislatures and our other governors to talk about what we can do. I speak to Governor Newsom from California and Governor Murphy. In fact, I don't know if you know this or not, but on gun safety, I pulled together for the first time in the country 9 other states that are all joining and have them focused on gun interdiction to stop the flow of illegal guns from coming into our state. No other governor has convened other governors and said, you know, let's use your law enforcement, your intelligence gathering. Let's share information and stop the guns. And I started this back in January, and the whole head of ATF was in New York City yesterday to celebrate what we did. And the fact we've had over 485 investigations, a lot of leads being shared, and we're getting more guns off the street. So you mentioned sort of the collaboration with other governors. I work with anybody, pulling together, whether it's on smart gun safety legislation or what we can do on gun interdiction cooperation, or dealing with the abortion issue and putting a spotlight on it. There's no limit to what we can do when we work together.
Speaking of which, do you think that Republicans have been properly helpful to a Democratic governor from, well, what used to be their territory, upstate New York? Have the Republicans shown you the proper deference?
I don't know what proper deference would look like. I have relationships with everyone, and I continue going to parts of the state that have more Republican leaders. I just convened a farm roundtable way up in the North Country where it's all Republican elected leaders, and had a chance to sit down with, you know, their farmers and talk about their concerns. I was just in Clayton, New York, and talked about some signature products to protect from the effects of flooding on Lake Ontario and the St. Lawrence. And I always invite Republican elected leaders, you know, whether they're so. I've been much more collaborative in my approach because I believe it's the right thing to do. People want us to work together. Yes, I'll keep working with them. I always have. So I don't know what kind of deference I expect, but they get it from me. I respect people who are elected. I always will work with them.
Should New Yorkers be worried about the revised economic forecast released by your budget office this summer?
Well, because we were so conservative in our approach, we're going to be fine. And I say that with the knowledge that when we were putting together our budget analysis, and that was, you know, I was brand new as governor, we started talking about our budget for January. We had extraordinary tax receipts coming in. Wall Street was doing well. We had money from COVID relief from the federal government. But I knew that these were all one-time infusions of money into the state, and it would be very, very negligent on our part if we spent all that money last year. So what I did was realize that we only had 4% in our state reserves. Even when I was in local government, you know, 14 years on a town board in upstate New York, we always had reserves for that rainy day, and 15%. So I put aside 15% of our funds. It's all targeted to get there. So I want to reassure New Yorkers that we are prepared for the rainy day or the storms or the hurricanes that come, because I can't count on Wall Street. I can't count on Washington. And so all of our expenses were managed with the very conservative approach, and that's why we're going to be able to get through this. And we are coming through the pandemic. More people are coming back to the city of New York, which is the economic engine that helps the rest of the state. But also, I'm investing in bringing more businesses upstate. I believe that the semiconductor industry holds great possibilities. I just was talking to Majority Leader Schumer, how great he's been. We are making significant investments in upstate jobs and downtowns and creating a whole new ecosystem of manufacturing again, which I find so exciting, because that's what gave my family a chance to be lifted out of poverty, was, you know, jobs, manufacturing, making steel, my grandpa, my father, and others. So I'm really energized about the overall opportunities that we're looking at now to jumpstart the economy. So temporary setbacks now, but we don't think that's going to hold in the long term.
We're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you about the loan forgiveness announced by President Biden. What effect will that have on our state?
That's going to help young people who are, you know, strangled right now by crushing debt. When I was growing up, we did not have a $1.7 trillion debt. I mean, always it was always consumer debt that was higher, you know, people's credit cards. And for the last decade or so, the highest debt in our nation has been student loan debt. And there's a lot of young New Yorkers in particular who want to be able to maybe start a new job or buy that first house and live the American dream, live the New York dream. And as long as they have this debt holding them back, they won't get the credit rating and ability to be able to do this. So I think it's going to be uplifting for many, many New Yorkers. We also doing our part to help more people get an education. We now have part-time students in our school systems. Our colleges are able to get tuition assistance. This has been a program since 1964, but it was only for full-time students. So there's people of all ages who want to better themselves with a degree at a college, but they have to work in order to pay for the tuition. So we're helping them out as well. So there's many ways we can help make investments in the human capital, the people we want to stay in New York and continue to make it the greatest state it can possibly be. And I'm really proud to lead during this time.
We're delighted to continue to talk with Governor Kathy Hochul, the state's first female governor, and we are delighted that she continues to come on and talk to us. Governor, I want to express my deep gratitude for your doing that, and thanks so much.
Thank you, Alan. Great to have such a thoughtful conversation, and we'll be back again.
Great.